Okay, welcome back to another edition of Addiction and Redemption. I haven't recorded in a while. I think I'm going to maybe bang out three or four here in a row. That's what she said? I don't know. I don't know if that was appropriate. Sorry. I'm stepping more and more into my essence. The more I do these, it's kind of fun. Anyway, so again, brought to you by Keenest Coaching. As many of you know, my name is Dave Keenest. Hit me up, Dave at DaveKeenest.com. Go to my website, check it out. Doing a little bit more work on there, but really mostly focused on just getting this entire story, I don't want to say wrapped up, but really just getting it out there. And I've been getting a lot of really good feedback from a lot of people who have been listening. So if you've one of those people who's been listening, thank you so much, and thank you for the feedback. And I've gotten reviews, and thank you for those as well. And you know, the purpose of this show, the purpose of these talks is really just to show you that anything's possible for you. So just really think about those things that you've been through and who you've become as a result of going through them, and you know what would be possible if you really harnessed that power that was ultimately at work behind the scenes as you were going through what you were. So I left off in Japan. So there I am in Japan. Like, dude, you're gonna die here. And I think I spent maybe, 7 or 8 days in Japan, maybe a few less than that, maybe like six or seven days in Japan. And like I said, when I woke up out of the initial blackout, I was jonesing so bad for heroin. And then I just started drinking to combat that. And once I started drinking, I couldn't stop. I just couldn't stop. And I was basically up 24 hours a day drinking. And the work day started. So I actually had to put on a suit at some point. And I remember, like, there was puke all over my room. And like, I told them I had the flu, and I was trying to get water down. And the water just tasted Japanese. Nothing against Japanese water, but it did not taste American. It tasted like Japanese water, even the bottled water. And the sink and the bathtub was like you used the sink faucet or the sink, what's the word I'm looking for? The sink faucet thing. You would kind of turn it, you would pivot it, and then it would go into the bathtub, and you would use the sink faucet to fill up the bathroom. And so they're all just these, like, not only am I like a hopelessly drunk alcoholic junkie withdrawing heroin fucktard, not only am I that, but there's all these foreign bells and whistles, these foreign intricacies I got to deal with. And I'm with all these people, technically. And I got a roommate, and he actually bailed on me for being his roommate because he thought he had the flu and he didn't want to catch it. But I don't know how these people didn't know. I mean, I had to have just stunk like death and booze the whole time. It was just such a shit show. So I'm relying on people, because I don't know how to get around, and my mental faculties are, I wouldn't know how to get around Japan today at all. And I'm pretty smart. And if you put me in the middle of Japan, I'd be like, what the fuck? Where am I? Like, find me the first person with non-yellow or brown skin to help me get to where I need to go or to do what it is I need to do. And eventually, after a few months, I'd probably figure it out. But I'm completely out of my mind, batshit crazy, insane. And I've got these sort of like colleagues who, like I said before, are like, you know, mid to late 20s, and some are in their early 30s. I think I was 31. I was one of the older ones. And I need to rely on these people. And they're just like, who the hell is this dude? You know, and I'm just like belching up liquor. I'm like just having to leave these, like, they were doing these trainings. So we would have to show up for training. And that what they're training us on is how to teach English to Japanese children. And I would show up at these trainings, and I would have to leave the trainings and like vomit. But really I was just going through, you know, heroin and alcohol withdrawal, because as soon as the alcohol, I couldn't drink during the days because I had to be at this work, and I would start going through withdrawals. And actually, that's not true, because what I would do is then at lunch, I would go to the liquor store and buy like a bottle of whiskey, and I'd be sipping whiskey all day. And as I'm talking about this and as I'm reliving it, the more painful it's getting to even share the fact that this was me, and that this was my soul, and this was my body, and that I was like this possessed robot in this foreign country trying to survive on this poison that I couldn't help but feed myself. And there are people listening to this who are not addicts, who are not alcoholics, who are just like, why didn't you stop? And I'm like, fucking A, that's the trillion-dollar question. I don't know. And I just I couldn't stop. It was impossible. And those of you who are alcoholics recovering or maybe practicing, those of you who are recovered drug addicts, or if you're currently a drug addict, I hope I'm talking to some people that can't stop, by the way. I know how it feels. Believe me, I hope you take some inspiration from this story. There's got to be someone who can't quit listening or eventually will end up listening. So it sucks, doesn't it? So anyway, there's my little shout out. I just couldn't stop. And the solution was quite a ways away. We'll get to the solution here in the next handful of episodes. I'm not sure how long it's going to take, but you know, bottom line is I'm wandering around Japan drunk and slowly starting to not be dope sick. So like by the fourth day there, I'm like kind of starting to get over the heroin withdrawal, but I can't stop drinking now. So it's just like as soon as the heroin wears off, the drinking just gets worse. And then the more better I started to feel as a result of the withdrawal fading away, the more alcohol I could handle. It was weird. And I don't think I ate any food the whole time. I remember going to this revolving sushi bar where it's like a conveyor belt with all this fancy sushi with this guy who I was working with. And he just, what these people must have thought of me. I mean, my God. But there's this conveyor belt of sushi and I'm trying to eat it and I just can't. I can't get any food down. And all I want is liquor. And I remember it being the middle of the night, and like I said in the last episode, I just couldn't sleep. And so it would be like 1 or 2 in the morning, and I think I had a skateboard with me. I actually did. I brought it in my suitcase, and I would be like riding my skateboard around this town in around the city in Japan, and it was so beautiful, and it was so clean. And I remember there was this bench I would sit on, and the streets were swept, and there was like you couldn't find a piece of garbage anywhere. You couldn't find like a gum wrapper on the street. And it was just the most, and there were mountains in the distance, and the air just smelled totally different. It was this completely different smelling air, and I could smell the sea. And I live by the ocean now in California, but it smelled different. You know, it was Japanese air. It was Japanese water. It was everything Japanese. It was like I was in this completely different culture, and it was so beautiful. And it was like I was staring at this beauty from inside of this disgusting, filthy prison I had created for myself. It was just the most terrifying and frustrating. And it's like it was just there was this evil demon in charge of the whole thing. It was like that episode of, I don't know if you ever saw the episode of Saturday Night Live where Simon and Garfunkel sell their souls to the devil, and the devil is John Lovitz. It's really funny. And they sell their soul to the devil, and they get all these hit records, and then it's a deal with the devil, so you never know what's going to happen. And then in that particular episode of Saturday Night Live, which I think Paul Simon was hosting, Paul Simon gets into an elevator, and the elevator stops, and the devil appears. It's John Lovitz, appears in the elevator with him, and it's like, well, this is it. You just have to spend eternity here in this elevator with me. And then it's like, ha, 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 ha. And that's what deal with the devil means. And when I got addicted to that heroin back in Chicago, I made a deal with the devil, and the devil was laughing at me. And it was as if I was completely and totally possessed and controlled by evil, and that all that was evil was laughing at me by putting me in the middle or the center of this beautiful, picturesque place that just defied the senses and how beautiful it was, with these beautiful shops and these ancient traditions and just these kind people, and then just made me a prisoner. It was like I was a little toddler locked up in a little, like in a little playpen with a cage. It's like being locked up in a playpen cage in the middle of this beautiful place and just knowing I couldn't escape. And all I would have had to do was put those drugs down or put that alcohol down, and I would have been fine, but I couldn't. It was just like this super evil, sick, demented catch 22. And there was, it's just so far beyond me. I mean, I'm starting to stumble on my words because the situation was so far beyond me, so far beyond anything I can comprehend. And those of you who know me know that my life is about freedom. My life is about the surf and the waves and the Southern California attitude and all of that and the free-spirited nature of what it means to be human. And I so appreciate what I have now as a result of that prison that I experienced. And actually, real prison, almost, a few years, not even a few years, not too long down the road, there was the possibility of real prison, and I'll get there too. But the experience of being locked up there in Japan was just so awful. And I remember I was laying on my bed, pissed drunk at like 3 a.m, and I was staring up at the ceiling, and the stucco of the ceiling was speaking to me. And again, like I said in the last episode, the only clear thought was, you're going to die. You are going to die here. Like, something really fucking bad is going to happen if you don't get out. And what I did was, it was probably 3:30, 4 in the morning. And again, I didn't know where I was. I had very, very vague recollection of getting to where I had gotten. And I just took the suitcase and I stuffed whatever clothing I could into it. I could barely get it zipped. I was so weak and just so disgusting and just this vile creature. But I stuffed all I could into this suitcase. And then it's so fucked up. I didn't even realize the suitcase had rollers. So I'm just like, I just drag this suitcase. I see these two guys that were part of the teaching program in the hallway. And I'm just like, later, guys, I'm taking off. And I figured telling them was enough. They didn't tell the other people that I left, but I'm like, see you guys, like, take it easy. Japan's too much for me. And they were just like, see you later. And I was like, how do I get out of here? And they were like, here are the directions. And I don't know if I scribbled the directions or made a mental note about how to get from where I was to the airport, but I just dragged this suitcase, like, didn't even activate the wheels or like the handle that has you pull it. I just dragged the suitcase out into the streets of Japan and like got on like a train or like a subway or whatever, or bullet train or something. I can't even remember. And I get to this one train stop and I see these people, these white people, and this guy's got a cowboy hat on, and I'm like, they're from America. And I remember walking up to them and just being like, get me to the airport. Get me to the airport right now. And they're just like, okay, just follow us. And I'm so fucked up and I'm so drunk. And I think at this point I made up a lie. I think I was like, somebody died. I need to get home. I don't know how to get home. I think this saying that somebody died was part of the process of getting home. I know this much because I just fucking lie about anything. But I somehow got to an airport and I had a credit card on me. So I had enough money to buy a plane ticket, but I got to this airport and they sell liquor everywhere. So I remember I bought this little, like, it was like a picture, like a jar of jelly, like a small Smucker's jar of jelly. Like, I bought like two or three of those filled with sake, and they're like these pull off lids, and just pulled the lids off and just fucking slammed the sake. And I didn't have to wait too long for a plane, but I got on this plane. And in the meantime, now, because it's like much later in the day, if not the next day, I can't tell you, they're like, I'm missing. I'm officially missing. Those guys I told I was leaving didn't tell anybody. And so by international standards now, I'm nowhere to be found. And so the people who were in charge of this teaching program are calling my parents and they're like, your son is missing. We have no idea where he is. We broke into his room and he's gone. Nobody knows where Dave is. And so I was missing by international standards by however, from whatever time I left until I got home, which was like 36 or 48 hours later, or maybe even longer. I have no fucking clue. And so the impact that had on my loved ones is, I don't know. I hope they're not listening, but yeah, being missing was it didn't even really dawn on me, you know, until I got home. And I'm going to kind of wrap this up because I've been going, this is kind of a longer one, but I'm going to talk about the what transpired from here, because the end isn't in sight yet. So thanks again for listening. This has been another edition of Addiction and Redemption, brought to you by Keenest Coaching. You know my name. You know how to find me. So thanks again for listening. God bless and have a beautiful day. Bye-bye.